the hard way after missing the first four or five sentences of some.
Okay, it's going now.
Yeah. Okay, so what they decided to do on this particular flight was to go ahead and dump the, since the CG location was out of kilter for this particular test, go ahead and dump the water overboard. Mm-hmm. Well, this sounded like a real good idea, so they hit the pumps and dumped the water overboard. But due to the pressure differential, the water didn't want to go overboard. It just filled up the deck. The main deck, and it was running in, and Sandy Friesen was on the mic hollering, "You got water in the deck, water in the deck." Conroy and the crew thought they said flutter. They almost had a damn conniption.
Okay.
And so they came in with an emergency landing, and one guy went back and looked to see where the flutter was, and he saw this guy Sandy Friesen standing there, and he just douched down completely with his water. Just came flowing down that hatch.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the hilarious points. The other one was after, see, normally you have to do, the company has to do their preliminary tests, turn them over to FAA, and FAA verifies it, and finally FAA will put their people on board the flight test of the airplane. Another occasion was that you have to go through various maneuvers, roller coasters, and check your rudder throw, ailerons, and what you do, you put a pulse in there. And your instrumentation, your rudder seat, with pulse, and then I know you've gone through, you've heard people, you say you're aeronautical, aren't you?
Theoretically, yeah.
Well, you know, the old dampening effect, you do roller coasters and see how long you dampen out.
Yeah.
Quite different than the theoretical thing in the book.
Mm-hmm.
All you do is put a pulse and let everything dampen out. We were doing this. So what you do with a rudder after you do this dampening type experiment and check for the instrumentation, what the G-loads are and things of this nature, FAA says you've got the Stratocruiser limits on the rudder. So you've got to check this test. Conroy sold out of him. Anytime FAA wanted something, Conroy, it's just human nature for him to fight it. So he says, hell no. And they said, hell yes. So finally they decided we'll do it. Through some encouragement for myself as an NASA rep. So he says he'll get those damn FAA bastards up there and teach them a lesson. So they take off that afternoon and they're doing the slip and they can see the rudder effect on the speed of the big fuselage. And so we're on board the airplane and the FAA guy says, okay, ready for this particular maneuver. Side slip to the right. So what you do, you go into sort of a fixing to fall over and you kick your rudder. You can get reverse rudder lock on this thing. But FAA had never had a mass like this in the air. So when we kicked up, started to side slip through the rudder end, you could just feel the G-load build up. And the FAA man aboard started screaming, stop this thing, stop this thing. Pull her on, let her slip on out, and get on out of the thing, and then had a rudder limitation of plus or minus 17 degrees.
Yeah.
We never did have to prove 17 degrees, we only got up to about 12.
I had a, hope you don't mind backtracking, but did they leave those two outboard engines in with full props? They never did chop the ends on those.
No, they never did chop.
Yeah. And I really don't know, where do you place your strain gauges on a prop? Down near the hub?
No, you place it at different stations along your axes. Say your longitudinal axis of the prop is just an airfoil. It's like a wing. here is just, it's just a, it's just a wing section. So you put it along the, can't think of the terminology now, but along the center line of the airfoil. And then you,
of the propeller.
Of the propeller.
Yeah.
Section there, and place it bare station so that you get a bending frequency, just like in a helicopter, right? An airplane propeller tends to make the same actions, the lag and lead action that a helicopter blade will.
Yeah.
A propeller, an airplane propeller tries to do the same thing, but it's rigidity and reduced length. You can't do that as much, so you just design an airplane propeller blade to resist all this lead and lag, which the helicopter people have found out if you do that, you get blades that you can't fly with. Propeller you can, and so what you're doing is you're checking those, as you go through the bending and torsion modes, you're checking the strain, the stresses of particular points, and then you can collide it and come up with critical critical stresses that are limited to the design of the cross-sectional area of the blade. So all we had to do was one propeller. It was, you had to do some of this during the flight, a lot of it on the ground.
Did you burn that engine out there?
No, never burned the engine out. We had some other, I guess you'd call, anxious moments, different loadings. When we were going through our first load test, we had designed here at Marshall a pallet to carry the S4B, basically, and gave the design to Bob Prentice's people out at Douglas, and they built the pallet because they had to make basic responsibility for it.
And it came out of Heimberg shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Basic design.
Excuse me, that's for the S4 you're talking about?
The S4,
yeah. Yeah.
So my boss and I, Stephen Hamlin at the time, we had a difference of opinion of how, what you would put on the aluminum to the balloon. See, the Super Guppy had two angles that served as the rails, and the pallet was an I-beam that would slide directly on this aluminum to aluminum sliding, you can gall and freeze. So my boss and I had a discussion about what to use as a bearing, lubricant bearing, some frictionless bearing surface in there. I wanted to use Teflon, and Jack Conroy, being the non-engineer, taught my bosses, you got to think of freezing conditions you get with Teflon. Teflon will freeze up. So he and my boss decided, well, they'd go to nylon. And I tried to tell them, due to the porosity of nylon, you let the thing sit there very long, you're going to have a, you're going to freeze. But the cold flow that they were worried about in the Teflon, you had to get something like 150,000 PSI to start cold flowing Teflon, but I couldn't talk them out of it, so I suggested we put banana peels on it. So we put nylon on it, and so we were sitting out the Marshall here, designed what we call a cargo lift trailer, Heimberg's outfit there, and this is a scissor on both ends. To raise the car goes up to the floor level of the city for the deputies. And so anyway, like I said, we went ahead and installed the nylon as per my boss's direction, Jim Hamilton's directions. We were sitting out at the FAA hangar in Los Angeles, going to go through a loading exercise with Dr. Von Braun. So somehow about maybe an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours before Dr. Von Braun was to arrive, the jet stream with some of the officials at NASA headquarters to show them what we had done. Gene Hamilton and the Douglas troops decided, well, maybe we ought to go through just a little halfway practice run. And so they raised the cargo lift trailer up, proper orientation of aircraft flow, start up the winch to move the dummy S-4 in, and start and it won't go. Start and it won't go. And so I told my boss, I said, well, remember that nylon you're going to use?
Yeah.
I said, well, I think it's frozen. Take two Corbifors and put under the end of the pallet because it overhung on the cargo lift trailer, and lower the cargo lift trailer, you'll break that suction you created with the nylon, which Teflon wouldn't have done. Now I'm going over to the FAA to finish up some flight test information. I mean, I hope y'all get it unstuck before Dr. Von Braun gets here. When I left, there's about 25 people running around in mad hysterics. They finally got it unstuck. Way able to carry on. And as Dr. Von Braun normally late, it gave him an extra hour to accomplish.
Did they replace it with Teflon then?
Well, we, not really. A couple of the Douglas design engineers and myself had the hoodwink on. His people want to do what my boss wanted. My boss, after that, wasn't as adamant for nylon.
Is this Heimberg you're talking about?
No, Gene Hamilton.
Oh, Hamilton.
Wasn't as adamant for the nylon as he was before, so I told the Douglas people that we wanted to put something on there based on recommendations, which was oil light. Told the Douglas people that's what we wanted to put.